Love Story from Portland's Forest Avenue Press in conversation with Liz Scott, author of the memoir, This Never Happened. Jackie will be reading and signing books at Powell's City of Books in downtown Portland on Friday, October 4th at 7:30 p.m.
Coming up next on Black Book Talk, hosts Emma Jackson Ford, Obie Hill, and Patricia Wells speak with Montrell Goss, who goes by Chillin' the Poet. Born and raised in North Portland, he works with teens and youth and is author of 6 books. His newest release is titled Chillin' the Courageous Coyote Meets the Young Kids.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Poll Disclosure on Friday, October 4th from 4 to 7:30 p.m. at the AWOL Dance Collective Space in Portland. Poll Disclosure is a full-length circus theater show using aerial acrobatics as a conduit for storytelling. The artists will unfold the story of two women and their journeys through healthy and unhealthy relationships featuring live, original cello music. The artists will hold space after the show for discussion. Again, that's Poll Disclosure, Friday, October 4th from 4 to 7:30 p.m. at the AWOL Dance Collective Space, 513 Northeast Schuyler Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I feel like I can make it. The storm is over now.
Good morning, and welcome to Black Book Talk, October edition. I'm Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman, here with...
I'm Patricia Hill Welch, librarian emeritus.
And Obie Hill, Mirror Image Books.
And we have a very special guest today.
How you doing? I'm Montrell Goss. I go by Chillin' the Poet.
Welcome.
Yes.
Thank you guys for having me.
You know, I'm thinking we have a half an hour for you, but your story seems so big. You have so much to share. So we're going to get right into it. My first question is, tell us about being an author, being a poet, how you became a writer and wanted to be a published writer.
Right. So growing up, I struggled with reading. I didn't read good at all. Very low level. I was in programs that helped me read. Dealing with that was hard for me. I grew up in North Portland, and you see, like, on the movies, you know, kids hiding books, and, you know, they don't open their book bags. They didn't want to get talked about or bullied because they was reading, and I kind of had that mindset in my head, like, oh, I don't want, but I couldn't read anyway, so I kind of didn't have to hide anything because I couldn't read anyway, but just dealing with that was hard for me. Got into high school, couldn't read good, and I read one book in high school, Munster. By Walter Dean Myers, great book to me. That was my first book, like, that I ever read front to back, and I read it to get extra credit to graduate from high school. I didn't feel like a lot of my teachers were supportive. I think I had a few teachers that kind of, like, basically told me I wasn't going to be anything because I couldn't read, and that just motivated me. Just told myself, like, I'm not going to be that kid. I'm not going to do that.
Now, what high school was that, and what area were you at that didn't teach you to read in elementary school?
Oh, I grew up in North Portland. I went to all the North Portland schools. So it's not that a lot had teachers that did help me. I don't want to make it seem like they didn't help me. It was still a struggle. But when you got some teachers on the left helping you and then you got some teachers on the right tearing you down, you in the middle, like, which way do I go? When you got these people that you look up to and you like, okay, I'm trying to go the right way, but I'm getting a lot of negative. And a lot of people say people focus more on the negative than the positive. So,
and your friends, were they not readers also?
No, some of my friends were readers, but growing up, I mean, it was about sports. It was about basketball, football. It wasn't about reading books. It wasn't about math. It wasn't about any of that science. It was, if you couldn't play a sport, who are you? You didn't have no friends. You just, we didn't talk to you. If you wasn't in that gym with us, at that park with us, I don't think I knew your name. Like, that's all we did. We was at four courts with the chain net. And people know, if people from North Portland, they know about the chain net. You have to make it to the chain net. You have to ball. You know, if you ain't balling, you can't play on the chain net. You got to go on the other side. So people from North Portland know what I'm talking about. And and I know, like, every park from everywhere, from Northeast to North to, if you had that park and you had to play. And just reading wasn't a thing I looked forward to. It was me learning the basketball plays, me learning the football plays. I played quarterback. I played point guard, shooting guard, and I played basketball in college. It just, school just wasn't a thing for me. I didn't feel like I was going to make it in life if I was able to read a book. That wasn't, okay, you could read, but what else? How else you going to get money? And sports was the thing we thought was going to make us money. Like, you know, we're going to make it to the NBA. We're going to be in the NFL, you know. But that, I grew out of that. And I felt like, you know, that wasn't my calling. You know, even though I played in college, I was training to play overseas, just sports wasn't my calling. I still coach. I coach track, coach basketball. I still coach. I still stayed with the sports, but that just wasn't my personal calling for Montrell Goss. And, you know, my calling was writing, you know. So I took something I couldn't do and made it my job.
When did reading become important?
Reading became important probably my senior year in high school. I wrote a poem in high school. It was published in our school book. So that kind of took off for me, and reading became a thing to me because I grew up without my dad. My mom, single parent, four boys and a little girl. My little sister's deaf, so that was always, you know, reading books and sign language was hard, but that's how we was learning. So reading was always important because, you know, I had to do that for my little sister. And like reading to me was like, okay, you can't read books, but you could hear stories. So I used to like always just pay attention to the stories, and I would remember the stories. I got a good memory right now. And because I had to, I couldn't pass if I didn't know that book or that assignment. So when I hear it, they read the assignment, I just replay it and hear. So, but the thing is, I start writing that. My first book came out in 2006, and it just showed me that don't ever give up on anything that somebody tell you bad at or anything. And so it was very important.
I want to go back a little farther though, before the book. Okay, you obviously you read well enough to get through school. You just didn't like it. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Not necessarily, because I mean, to be, you know, honest, I mean, the school to me personally, school systems don't really pressure it, and I feel like they should. Okay. I feel like they should, like, technically, okay, you don't have to do any assignments and they're going to put you to the next grade. Like, that's okay, just how life is. Like, I work with kids and I see, like, wait a minute, this kid test scores is low. He's going to the eighth grade.
And I understand that. Okay, so, but what I'm trying to, okay, so I want to see how we turn the corner from being more of an athlete to writing a poem, simply because poetry is not necessarily the first thing that you think that a young athlete is going to choose. So how did you...
I wrote poems because it was a school assignment. Like, okay. I had to write it. It wasn't, I didn't have a choice.
Like, okay.
Like, I had very bad spelling. Handwriting was horrible. But you got to write this poem, you know, or else you ain't going to pass the class. So.
But you got to the point where you've written a book of poetry.
Yes.
So you had to get past what was mandated. So again, just tell me about that, because I'm just saying, did you read your poems to the guys that you were playing with? You were playing basketball with or whatever?
How my first book was published, maybe this answer, how my first book was published. So my brothers write, you know, my brother was a rapper, my other brother wrote poetry, my cousins wrote poetry, different things like that. I was around it, and I just went a different route, but my first book came out in 2006. Me and my brothers ran a summer camp, and We met a lady there and her daughters, and we hired her daughter, and we was calling her our godmom. And I was just telling her, like, man, one day I'm gonna write a book, but I'm just talking. I'm like, I'm gonna write a book. And then she was like, well, write it. And I was like, all right, yeah, mom, all right, I'm gonna write this book. But I was like, I ain't writing this book. I'm playing the PlayStation. I ain't writing this book. So she kept saying it, like, write the book. I need you to write the book. I'm like, you seriously want me to write this book? Like, so I wrote this poem called Sometimes. And I just reversed everything. Like, the sky was gray, the moon was, you know, just different colors, you know, grass was brown, dirt was green. I just wrote this book called Sometimes, and I mean this poem, and everybody was like, hey man, you should really write, like, that was kind of good. Like, and I was like, all right,
Now, you were, there were five of you. Where mm-hmm. are you in that line?
I'm the youngest boy. I'm the youngest boy at my mom's. But my dad has seven boys, so I'm in the middle with my dad's kids. They got, some of my brothers got different moms. But so I'm my mom's youngest boy. Yeah, right before my little sister. So just doing that. But yeah, so I actually, so she called me one day and she said, I need you to write this book. And I was like, why? She said, if you don't write this book, I can't do what God wants me to do. And I said, well, what does God want you to do? She said, he wants me to publish you a book. I was like, okay, yeah, okay. I said, but you saying this, I'm gonna do it. So I wrote 27 pages. I called her and said, Mom, I finished 27 pages. And she gave me a check for $1,500.
Ooh, you gotta answer the call.
And I can't, it can't get no more clear than that. You know, it couldn't get more clear than that.
So what happened then? Did you right away write another book?
Nah, after I wrote the first book, I went to college. I played basketball in college. I went to four different colleges. I went to move to Arizona and went to college. I'm still playing sports, though, because I still feel like, you know, sports was my thing. But then six years later, I was just like, I mean, basketball's fun, but that's all it is to me right now. It's like a hobby. I need a career. I need a job. Basketball is not, I'm not making it to the NBA right now. What can I do? And writing just jumped back in my head, and I was like, I'm gonna write another one. So I wrote another one called I'm not a writer, I am poetry. And that's just, it's just about, poetry is in me. It was already birthed in me before I was born, before my mom knew my name, before my dad knew my name. It was in me, and I felt that, and I felt like this is it for me. So when I wrote I'm not a writer, I am poetry, I said from now on I'll put out a book every 2 years.
Would you read one of your poems?
Yes. The poem I'm gonna read actually is called Young Boy, and it's kind of basically about kind of growing up. It's not technically my story, but it's a story that I know a lot of people can relate to, and I think it'll be good for people to hear this one. I'm just trying to find where it's at. 43. And this poem is in my fifth book, titled The Dark Road to Another Chance.
Did the same person publish all your books?
No, after that, I started publishing my own books after that. So it was more, I self-published. So it's just me. It's just me doing this, and I struggle sometimes, but I feel like, you know, struggle leads to success. And I don't believe I'm gonna quit because, you know, finances might be a little low, or I just don't feel like quitting. I don't think that's in me, and so. I mean, I'm just gonna read. I don't even need to read. I can recite it.
That's,
I don't need to
read.
I'm gonna recite it. Okay, so, I said, I asked this young boy, was his father still in the picture? Caught me off guard when he showed me a wallet size. He starts shaking. You could tell his heart was racing. Eyes glazed as a tear formed in his eyes. He told me the story about how his father left him, made him another statistic in a world that doesn't always accept him. Teachers and staff in the schools don't understand his pain or can relate to him, so they call him a problem child and they start to reject him. So if it takes a village to raise a child, he must be living on an island of his own, because it wasn't just his dad that left him, but also his community. A shame. And no disrespect to protests and things that's happening around the world, but when we gonna take a stand in our own neighborhoods to make a change? We got young boys in our own cities with their arms stretched out, crying for help, and people walk right by, scared to lend a hand. To me, that's kind of strange. Strange because them same young boys that they scared to help, they talk about on social media and they blast them on the news. Yelling that this gang violence has to stop, there must be something that we can do. But we can't. Because nowadays, community centers are about money and politics. And if you don't have that $5 to go play hoops in the gym, you get kicked out of it. Basically sending them right back to the streets, then people get right back on the news saying they need to stay out of it. Man, this is making me sick. We need to have something for these young boys to do. Not robbing them for what most of their parents don't have. To me, that doesn't make any sense. But I guess the rich gonna stay rich, the poor gonna stay poor, and these young boys still gonna stay lost until their father step up and that community help out that much more. Where's the love?
Nice.
Thank you. Yes. Okay, yes.
The gift of a photographic memory is amazing, wouldn't you say?
Yes, for sure. For sure, yeah. I mean, I'm almost to the point where I'm learning all my poems. So it's over 300. Over 300, almost 400 poems. I'm gonna try to learn and recite. So that's what I'm working towards. I like to give myself a challenge.
Do you write anything else besides poetry?
Yes. I actually just released my first children's book titled "Chilling the Courageous Coyote Meets the Young Kids," and I got that based off of my whole life too, not being able to read but remembering stories. So I feel like a lot of people say, you know, I grew up with anger. Some people say it's resentment towards my dad not being there or just the situations I was in. And I say, yeah, okay, we could say that. But I think it's a little deeper than that. And people always ask, I said, maybe it's the books I read. And it's like, well, you couldn't read. I said, well, maybe the books that was read to me. And they was like, well, what do you mean? I said, let's break this down. My favorite story growing up was the Three Little Pigs. So you got the Three Little Pigs. So say you say, take the Three Little Pigs, but the Three Little Pigs had a bully. He had an aggressor. The Big Bad Wolf was a bully. But nobody's really calling him a bully. It's never broke down as a bully. Lil Red Riding Hood had a bully. He ate Grandma. We know what he did. Grandma's gone. We can say ate all we want to. Grandma's gone. So why are we reading this? Goldilocks, she's breaking and entering in houses. We can say whatever we want. That's the truth. She was breaking and entering. She stole stuff. But who are they mad at? The black bears. And this is just the truth. And people don't break these stories down. They don't break them down like that. So my character, Chilling the Courageous Coyote, instead of him blowing those houses down, he's helping them build those houses. He's helping Lil Red Riding Hood to Grandma's house. He's feeding Goldilocks so she don't have to break in. So I didn't write those stories, but that's what my character is. And he resembles me. And that's what I do. I try to help people.
Is it somewhat kin to the Big Bad Wolf?
Nope. I did that. Coyotes have bad reputations. But I tell people there's a good coyote out there. Just like there's a good Montrell out there. So when I get pulled over, I got pulled over one time. And a police officer asked me what I did for a living. I said, I'm a book writer. He said, no, you're not. And I said, well, you're not a cop. I'm leaving. He said, well, I am a cop. I have a badge. I said, well, I'm a book writer. I got a book. I said, Google me. I said, you're going to Google me. You're going to find out more information than your police scanner. And he really Googled me. He didn't give me a ticket, but he really Googled me. And that's the what I'm trying to break. I'm trying to break that, you know, because I have dreads or I drive this type of car or I dress this type of way. Why do I have to be labeled how you want me to be labeled? I want to look how I look and be treated, you know, fairly. Like my characters in my book are multicolored to represent, you know, every race. You know, I didn't want a book of this or that. I want anybody to relate to this book. I don't, religion, color, race, however you want to say it's purple character, say it's a purple character. If that's what make you relate to this book, that's what I want. And back in my book, I put activities, you know, fill in the blank, word search, coloring sheet, amaze. Because sometimes we read books and then that's it. We don't have anything interacting or attaching us to the book.
Has this book just come out or has it been out a while?
Oh, it just came out. I did a soft release in June. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm bringing it back out since school's back in.
Oh, good. I'm just hoping that there's a way that you can get this book into the hands of students. You say you work with children now?
Yeah, well, I get contracted to work in. I do behavioral help. So I'm actually doing a reading today at 2:00 at Wilkes Elementary. So oh. I do readings. I go good. In. I try to just get the support I can from Portland. It's tough. But I know them doors is going to open up. And you know, I'm just waiting for him. I'm being patient, and I know I got something right here. I got a mascot being made. My brother's gonna wear my mascot. We're gonna go and travel. I just blew my book up like real big, like so. When I go and read, they can see the book. They don't have to be like, "Hey, I can't see the pictures." I'll be like, "Yeah, you can." I'll just pull it up. So I did just doing different things to put myself more out there. As y'all see, I know people can't see, but this is my
t-shirt,
and shaking hand, meet a friend is my slogan. And so I sell my t-shirts, my books. I have a website.
And the book looks good. I mean,
I appreciate it.
It's self-published.
Yeah.
You did a good job, whoever you worked with. It's just a really good cover, good illustrations and everything.
Thank you. Yeah, my little brother drew the coyote's face, forever tattoo in Vancouver, did the body of him and the rest of the illustrations in there. Olive Garden sponsors me, Umpqua Bank, Baskin Robbins.
Okay,
Forever Tattoo, they sponsor me, and Channel 2 been working with me very well. Actually got another interview with Channel 2 that's gonna air next week, so they've been helping me out and just getting a lot of support, you know. And it's just starting slow, but I feel it's gonna pick up. This is a series. This is book 1 of 5. It's a twist to it. It's not just a children's book. So once you read 2, 3, and 4, book 5, I'm in it. They drew me as a cartoon character in book 5. So it's Chilling the Crazy Coyote meets his creator, Chilling the Poet, in book 5. Can't tell you about the middle ones, but I can tell you about book five.
So why is he chilling?
That's what we do. We relax. I like to relax. I think a lot of people is serious. I think a lot of people is just too serious. And let's have fun. I like to have fun. And everybody know me. They're like, oh, Trail, man. They call me to have fun. And that's why I'm chilling. Like, I just like to chill, just write. You know, I'm actually writing for a play. I'm in a play this weekend called Unbreak My Heart. So I'm in this play this weekend. I wrote for them.
Is this based on the Tony Braxton song, Unbreak My Heart?
A lot of people ask. It's a relationship poem. A relationship play. This is about a couple. The man cheats. He cheats, but they see it differently, like through the eyes of. So most of the time, when people cheat and things like that, it's the worst thing. It's the worst thing in the world, you know, when people cheat. And the play does show that, but it just shows more of how can we forgive sometimes. Like, you know, can we forgive? Is forgiveness, is that really that hard? Or is it forgiveness only hard when it's something that affects you to the point where you don't want to forgive? So it's just a relationship play about, and then it's a play about single people. It's just an emotional roller coaster play, and I was blessed to be able to use my talents in it.
When and where? When is the play going to be and where?
The play starts tomorrow. It starts tomorrow. We're doing, actually, I'm going to look it up, make sure I want to get the right dates on there. We're doing three showings. Starting tomorrow, and then it's at Headwaters Theater. That's 55 Northeast Farragut Street. Tomorrow and Saturday, it's at 7 p.m. Starts at 7 p.m. And then on Sunday, it starts at 3:30 p.m.
And so you're a playwright too.
Yeah, no, I'm just in it. I help direct. I help. I just try to be helpful wherever I can be. I'm DJing tomorrow, maybe at Roosevelt High School. I went to Roosevelt. I'm trying to DJ tomorrow. I'm about to try to work that out today. We had a little bumps in the road, but we're gonna try to work it out for me to DJ tomorrow. Plus, I got to do the play, then go DJ. So I'm just doing that, writing my books, working with kids. I'm a motivational speaker. I just try to do anything I can do to help people. So if it's not about helping people, I kind of really don't want to do it, you know. So,
well, let's go back to your new book.
Yes, yes.
Tell us a little bit more about the plot.
So the plot is Chillin', the coyote. He's a coyote. So like I said, he does have a bad he has a bad reputation being a coyote, and we look at the world of coyotes eating cats and just, you know, attacking animals in the world. And this is how people look at these coyotes, but I didn't see people put their head in lions' mouths and petting pet bulls and doing that. So we value things based off of what our perception of the outside appearance. But once we get to know, you know, the actual person or actual thing, it changes your perspective of things. So he's misunderstood. It's a coyote that's misunderstood because he's a coyote and look at him, you know. But so it's three kids in mind. And of course they see this coyote and they run from it. Of course, I'm gonna run from a coyote right now if I see a coyote. You know, I'm not going, hey, come pet. I'm not going to pet a coyote. But so that's what the kids did. They ran from this coyote. Coyote is confused. He's like, why did they run away from me? Why? And that's how I look at life sometimes. Like, why do I get judged like that? Or what did I do? You know, and that's why my slogan is shaking hand, meet a friend. Because we never know. If you shaking hands is like, I wouldn't be here today if I didn't reach out and shake, you know, Perry's hand. You know, that's who invited me. And
big thanks to Perry Gardner. And I will say that I think some of you heard a promotion saying that Renee Mitchell was going to be here, and unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond her control, Renee couldn't. I absolutely think you were meant to be here, because we were like, oh, we have to fill our time slot. And Perry Gardner, who is like just the best person in the world, you know, sent a little note and said, I have a friend. And I thought, okay, this was meant to be. So yeah, you were meant to be here.
Yeah, appreciate it. So just doing that. So he gets a chance to meet the kids, and the perspective of him and them changes. And he actually does something for them in the book.
Would you read a little excerpt from
Yes. So once upon a time, there lived a courageous coyote and three young kids in the woods. The kids were sad every day because they didn't have anywhere to play, and the coyote was lonely because he was misunderstood. One day, the kids decide to go for a walk, to laugh and just talk, with hopes they can find something fun they can do. But as they traveled and traveled, through trees, dirt, and gravel, they thought and they thought, but still no one had a slight clue. As the kids continued to walk, laugh and just talk, they came across some animal tracks on a trail. One kid was frightened, one was excited, and the last one tried to guess the animal, but couldn't tell.
Okay, folks, you gotta get this book at the end. I just think there's so many good people in Portland and everywhere that we don't hear about, but I mean, you are just such a gift to this community.
Thank you, I appreciate it, Yes, really? If anybody wants to purchase a copy or a t-shirt, you could just, I have a website, Chillin's Creations is my company. We chill all the way around. Yes, C-H-I-L-L-I-N-S-C-R-E-A-T-I-O-N-S .com, where I have different shows I did, quotes on there, interviews, just different things that I'm doing in the community on there. My name on Facebook is Trell Goss. You can look me up. Trell Goss is really me. It's not somebody talking for me. It's really me.
Just T-R-E-L-L?
T-R-E-L-L-G-O-S-S. Okay. On Instagram, it's underscore Chillin' the Poet on Instagram. So you can find me. And it's really me, and I really talk to people, and I love it.
You're listening to Black Book Talk on KBOO. Listen, you need to write a poem, I think, called Pinch Hitting. You know, when you get off that bench.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good one for you.
Why would that be a good poem, Obi?
He knows.
I feel it.
Okay.
I'm going to write it.
Mystery.
Next time I get invited up here, I'm going to read it. I'm going to have it done.
Okay. We're drawing to a close, and we do have some announcements of things that are happening this weekend. Is there any last thing that you'd like to share with the audience? Maybe a question that we didn't ask you, but you wanted to share?
Just if anybody, booking information is, if anybody wants to, you know, book me to come to a reading at a school or event, community event, set up a table, I'm willing to do that. I just need support at this point.
I have a question. You said that you're trying to get the love in Portland, but I had the impression that, you know, you've gone outside of Portland to share your book. Has the response been any different anyplace else?
Yeah, the response is a big difference. Like right now, my book is in a bookstore in Richmond, California. It seemed like, you know, I just sent some to New Mexico. They're trying to send me to New Mexico. I just sent some to Mexico. Sent some books to Uganda, Africa. I just think poetry scene it just needs a little bit more support on a book. I know music, singing, and rapping is big, and everybody promotes that a little bit more, but like, we don't get a chance as book writers to just like, hey, how can we showcase our talent? So that's just what I'm searching for.
Okay, Portland, you know what you have to ask for. Go out and get Montrell's book. Well, you need to find this book in Powell's and all the other bookstores. But, well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
You've been a great guest.
Thank you.
And now, we just want to mention one or two things that are happening this month. Let's see, in the world of literature, books, and fun reading. The Friends of the Library is going to have their big book sale from Friday through Sunday, starting tomorrow and going through Sunday. On October 10th, the Well-Read Black Girls Book Club will be reading My Sister, the Serial Killer by Oyinkan Braithwaite, and that's at 7 p.m. at Powell City of Books. Saturday, October 12th, the Oregon Music Hall of Fame will have their award ceremony at the Aladdin Theater. Not a book event, excuse me, but our own Mr. Paul Knowles, the mayor of North Portland, will be honored for his contributions to Portland's music scene. So I'm hoping that a lot of people can come out and just support Mr. Knowles, because he has supported the community. On Tuesday, October 15th, from 6 to 8, there's going to be Spirit of Portland Award winner S. Renee Mitchell will be celebrated at the Red. And on Monday, October 21st, 7:30 to 9, Ta-Nehisi Coates will be at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, although I think it's sold out. But you may find somebody who has a spare ticket. This is the Library Lady Emeritus saying goodbye for October.
See you next month.
Bye-bye.
I feel like I can make the storm in. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Behind the Bullet film screening on Friday, October 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center in Portland. The documentary film Behind the Bullet deepens awareness of untold stories from the U.S. gunfire epidemic. Director Heidi Heumann will be in attendance and answer questions after the film. There will then be a soul box procession into Multnomah Village. Again, that's Behind the Bullet film screening on Friday, October 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center, 7688 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of John McEwen, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, on Thursday, October 3rd from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Whiteside Theater in Corvallis. John McEwen, founding member of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, has been performing for over 45 years on banjo, fiddle, guitar, and mandolin. Often referred to as the String Wizard, he weaves together songs and stories of his travels and family life. Again, that's John McEwen, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, on Thursday, October the 3rd, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Whiteside Theater, 361 Southwest Madison Avenue in Corvallis. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Shocks of Sheba,